Want to find a way to give back this holiday season, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. It's easy. Instead of wasting time and money on gifts that nobody wants or needs, help your friends and family give back and give to something good, something meaningful. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for a friend or family member, a cause, or an organization. Help out the local animal shelter. Get that little lending library up and running. Just make your world a better place. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. 'Tis the season for giving back, and giving feels good. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the third episode of the Red and White Chalkboard Podcast. I think we've set up our setup differently this time, in that, as you can see, we're obviously both naturally in a coffee shop enjoying a lovely beverage, digitalised. We're going to be trying something remote for this episode so we can get some actual video out to you guys and we can react to the closing of the Premier League week. So I think today we're going to be touching on, obviously, the results of the weekend, the implications on the title challenge, a couple of the results in the top four. You know, I feel all the teams this week anyway in the top four didn't particularly do that well. And we're also going to obviously have to touch on Manchester United and Spurs and their results of the weekend. So I think a great place for us to obviously start off is Arsenal 0, West Ham 1 on the Saturday afternoon. Cormac, original thoughts on what the hell happened this game? Why Arsenal weren't able to capitalise on a West Ham team which have not been great this season?
I mean, it was absolutely dire to watch. Like, I mean, the thing is, I wasn't even that surprised. I know we've been, well, I say we've been better. We've been, you know, going on a, we haven't lost recently. But just going forward attacking, we had absolutely nothing to offer. Obviously, we started with Mourinho up top against, obviously got two against Leicester. Didn't do anything. It's not a centre forward. It's not really fair to judge too much on kind of what he can do there. But just kind of, Odegaard's completely off of this season. No creativity, no urgency. Trossard hasn't got enough. Sterling came off the bench and didn't do anything. Wanyeri, like, has his moments, but, you know, he's 17 years old. You can't expect him to carry Arsenal on his back. I mean, credit to West Ham. They set themselves up perfectly in terms of tactically. They were just sat back, five at the back, three at the back, whatever you want to call it, and just hit us on the counter. And Aaron Wan-Bissaka, that lethal full threat that
Aaron
he
Wan-Bissaka,
is.
I've said it all along. The guy's got it. The guy runs in Timberlands, but just somehow makes it work. It's insane. Okay, just to round back a little bit, I'm just going to go back to Odegaard. You say that he's been off the ball this season. What do you think is the system? Do you think it's his post-injury fitness? What do you think is driving this sudden change in Odegaard? Because last season he was your talisman, and it, you know, this season, especially in recent weeks, it doesn't seem like he's had the same level of productivity that he definitely had last season. What do you think is kind of driving that?
I think injury is a lot of it. Obviously, he was out for about 2 or 3 months, and I think he really suffered from that. And coming back, I don't know if he got rushed back, but he came back and he's been fairly off the mark ever since. Potentially the setup as well. Obviously, compared to last year, where we were a lot more kind of free-flowing, especially going forward, it was a lot more interesting to watch. We have been so defensively sound, but I think that has come at the sacrifice of our ability to go forward, the creativity that we have, and I mean, you can still see he has his moments where he's trying to tick things around, and he's such an intelligent player. He gets into the right parts and everything, but I don't know if it's what's around him that isn't ticking correctly. I don't know if it is his injury and he's not 100% fit still. But I think it's a combination of injury, setup, and just maybe a bit of confidence as well on the back of being
a digital. Maybe player. A lack of reference point as well for him. I feel obviously
absolutely
a dearth in the attacking section. I feel that losing Bukayo Saka as well has really stunted his productivity as a result of Saka not being there. I felt like them two have a pretty good connection in that side, and to lose that is...
Yeah, I think another large part of it underrated so would be the loss of Ben White, bizarrely.
Huge.
That right-hand side had you know, Ben White, Odegaard dropping in, and then Saka there as well. And that was such a little ecosystem that they had going on down the right wing. It just worked perfectly. Ben White, overlapping sometimes, cutting in, just the three of them creating their own space. And, you know, when we have Partey, God forbid, on the pitch, which sucks as it is, and then playing it right back, it's not the same. He hasn't got the legs for it. He hasn't got, again, he is a midfielder trying to fill in at right back when we've had to. Timber, to his credit, he has come in and done a job. He's probably one of our more consistent players this year, maybe even if it is at left back more than right back. But something that Ben White offers is that space and that comfort that Odegaard and Saka have. And having, obviously, like you said, Saka out has just killed Odegaard as well.
It has, hasn't it? Absolutely. I agree. Ben White definitely made that right back position his own, and I felt like it was perfectly drawn up as a result of the system Arteta wants to play. So, obviously, really not ideal losing 1-0 to West Ham. I feel if it had been a different opponent, there could be some mitigation here. But to lose to a team which has been, even with their new manager, not having a great season. What is your opinion on the mentality of the squad right now after, you know, an opportunity to really get close to Liverpool, you know, had the City game gone differently, obviously now talking hypotheticals, you guys would have closed the gap immeasurably, whereas now it's looking at 11 points post-City win.
11 points.
What's the state of the mentality of the squad right now? Because obviously this season was the season, wasn't it, for the title charge. So where do you think the squad's at?
Probably just worn, knackered. I mean, we've come so close the last 2 years. It looks like we're going to get three back-to-back second place finishing, which is excruciating. And which goes again to show the level that Man City have been at over the last however many years, just being that consistent. Having this many injuries, has it been the amount of football this season? Probably. Has it been things like VAR breaks and kind of sprinting straight after that? Probably. There's been so many, obviously, hamstring injuries. I think injuries have killed us, if you're looking at the entire season. But that being said, January transfer window, not bringing anyone in, especially any forwards, I think was a big mistake. You know, this was before the Havertz injury. This was when we knew we needed a striker. We needed a striker since last summer, you know. And we tried to have Havertz there. And credit to Havertz, you know, he gets a hard time. He's not a striker. I think that's known. He is a nightmare to play against in the terms he's not going to stop running. He's not going to run you ragged, which is great. However, his finishing and his goal threats isn't as good as it should be if you want to win the league. And we needed a striker before his injury, and we haven't got one in. And we're playing fucking Marino up front. And, you know, like, I don't know what we expect to come out of that. So I think the squad is going to be demoralised. I think Arteta is going to be absolutely infuriated. But, I mean, you know, looking at it as kind of a blip, teams have down seasons, and it looks like this is just ours. But the thing that's come with that is City have had their down season the same year. And we should be better and capable of capitalising on that. Liverpool, while they have been the best team in the league this year, they haven't been world beaters. You know, they've the last, I think it was the last eight games, I think they've drawn four. So they're dropping points.
Absolutely.
But we just haven't had the quality going forward and goal-scoring threat that we've had the last few years. I know, again, we haven't had that nine, but it seems to have been shared a lot more. Where, you know, Odegaard last year finished in double figures. Obviously, Havertz finished in double figures. Saka finished in double figures. Whereas this year, I think it's only Havertz and Saka who got to double figures. Yeah. I might be wrong on that, but double figures.
I think I 100% agree. I think the post-Saka injury, everyone has just had this suffer of confidence and a lack of form. Just to round back to the transfer window, I think it's a massive missed opportunity for Arsenal, isn't it? Because I think the phrase was used, they're going to keep their powder dry and wait until the summer. But I think this was an opportunity for them. You look around the top five leagues and there was value in the market, even for 6 months. You look at Kolo Muani, who's gone to Juventus and scored four goals.
Yep.
You look at what Aston Villa have done to refresh their squad for the final 6 months, bringing in Asensio and Rashford. I mean, these players were available. Arsenal chose not to to fix a problem that they had presented themselves when the opportunity was present. So I think that's going to, we're going to look back at the end of the season and really see that moment and think that was not the correct thing to do, probably. So yeah, on reflection, Arsenal are going to not be too pleased about that. I think what is the, based off the West Ham, and you can't make gigantic judgments based on one result, but as I'm sure we're about to discuss, league now looks almost tied up. What is the, if Arsenal don't win the Champions League and stay second in the Premier League, are you still thinking that's a good season, or are you starting to think where is the project going and what direction is it going in? What's your thoughts?
I mean, obviously, I think, I mean, if we win the Champions League, which I think we definitely are, as we discussed on our previous episode, if you haven't listened to, a little plug there, go and have a listen. But it's obviously, it's not been a successful season. It's been a failure of a season. Finishing second again, no trophy again, which is frustrating. In terms of the project, I think the talk of sacking Arteta personally is absolutely ridiculous. If you look at where he's taken us to where he's taken us now, exactly. And like, we are now coming into that time where our players are now hitting. We've had such a young team, but now the players are getting into their, I'd say, their prime. You look at like Saliba's going to be 25, Odegaard's going to be 26, 27. It's kind of the player, Saka's going to be 23, 24. It's going to be at that time now where we can really go for it. And I do think we are probably only one or two signings off still having.
Want to find a way to give back this holiday season, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. It's easy. Instead of wasting time and money on gifts that nobody wants or needs, help your friends and family give back and give to something good, something meaningful. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for a friend or family member, a cause, or an organization. Help out the local animal shelter. Get that little lending library up and running. Just make your world a better place. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. 'Tis the season for giving back, and giving feels good. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Pushing again for a title and trophies next season. But going next season, if you know, I mean, to be honest, the way you can talk, and I can tell, you can probably tell, I'm already writing the season off because it would take an absolute colossal crash from Liverpool.
You're talking to a Man U fan, mate. Don't worry about that. We're masters at it. We're masters at it now.
Yeah, exactly. The season's already done and you're in December. But yeah, I think one or two signings off going in. But it's simple as we need a trophy. Arteta needs a trophy. And that's got to be the focus going into next year. It's going to be going for the title. Liverpool are going to be probably just as good, depending on, obviously, looking at their contract situation. But then you've got City, I don't doubt, will be back. Chelsea,
well,
maybe.
On that note, I think now's a great time to just, we'll round up on Arsenal. Champions League or bust, devastating defeat. It wasn't what
stinks.
Many people, yeah, stinks. Doesn't, no one expected it. And I think that's completely removed all bite out of the title fight. And on that note, let's now talk Manchester City 0-2 Liverpool. What a shame, because this fixture is so fantastic for the past few years. It's been something which represented the best of the Premier League. And watching the game on Sunday, this game never got out of third gear because Liverpool just had total control. Liverpool were all over City. City offered nothing. I think, again, reiterating, when you take Haaland out of that team and the state of the rest of the players right now, the levels that they're playing at, they don't really look like much at all, which is never a good sight if you lose one player and all of a sudden you look completely incompetent. I think Liverpool were just defending well. They look like they love defending their box. They're breaking up the pitch with speed. They look like they could score at any given opportunity they're creating. I think it was just such parity between the two sides on Sunday. And yeah, Liverpool, as a result of that, if they're doing that and they're playing that type of way against a team so experienced, who else is really going to stop them at this point with the lead they've got?
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, Liverpool's just so in control. Like, it felt like they scored just when they felt it was time to score. And, you know, if City did get another one back, you wouldn't have doubted Liverpool to go and go another one maybe again. I mean, looking at, just touching on City briefly, they were, I didn't think they were horrible. I didn't think they were poor. I just thought they were completely outclassed there by Liverpool. Yeah. They had a much younger team on, other than kind of Ake and De Bruyne, who, by the way, RIP to a Premier League great. He's, you know, finally looks like he's slowing down. Thank God, as an Arsenal fan, but he's going to be missed for sure. But no, I think Liverpool were just, again, to their credit, just really classy. Just know how to play.
Yeah, just better. Smart. They were just better. I thought, again, we referenced it last time, that City back four, back five, back six, including Nico Gonzalez, just now has this dearth of experience. They've lost Walker, which I get. I just don't think people really truly recognise how important he has been for City over the last few years. He's saved it. Obviously, I know he wasn't the player he had been this season, but he still had that experience. And now they don't have it, and they've replaced it with a 20-year-old from the French League who's just been maybe a year and a half in senior football from Uzbekistan. It's so far removed from what they have had the past few years. And that lack of experience is going to cause them a whole lot of pain. I think a lot more pain before it's going to get any better. Because naturally, they're going to get to the summer and obviously spend more money. But these players that they're going to be buying aren't going to be, you know, dripping in experience, essentially. They're going to be younger players who are there to refresh the system. But that takes time for them to understand what's been happening at City the last few years, understand the system, understand the success and the pressure that comes with it. So I think we're going to keep seeing these type of performances from City where they just look a bit numb almost. They're just a bit lifeless. Yeah. And, you know, for their sake, they need Haaland back immediately. Until he's back, it's just going to be painful.
Even with him back, though, I don't think that really... I mean, you know, he's been playing pretty much all season. He is a vocal point for them, and that does... You know, that helps. But I don't... You know, it goes to say, people, I think, give Haaland a hard time because he came into the league, scored 36 goals. And then everyone got bored, it felt like. And then the year after, it was like, oh, he's not a good football player. All he can do is score, which is ridiculous. But, he does go through games of having less than 10 touches of the ball. That doesn't mean he's not going to score a goal. But that is why he's there. What City need is that team around him in order to allow him to score, which they have had last year and the year before. Mamouche looks like a player. I think he's
Mamouche does look good.
He looks like a serious guy. Coming in for that, you know, kind of De Bruyne slot, maybe kind of off the striker.
Well, I think Savinho as well has established a good connection with Haaland. I think Savinho needs a Haaland type in the box because he will create chances. And at the minute, I looked, you know, watching at the weekend, I thought Doku and Savinho are obviously very good players.
Yeah. Interesting, isn't it? They're kind of like an old school wingers again. Kind of having, you know, left foot on the left, right foot on the right, which is anti-Pep ball. You know, he's gone back the other way and everyone's going to be copying it again.
That's it. But now there's no centre man for them to finish off any of the chances that these wingers are creating. So, yeah, I thought City, rubbish. Brilliant.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and complain about it because...
No. It does mean
Liverpool are good. That is so true. That's so true. So yeah, Liverpool were good. Salah, so good.
Yeah. Quickly, just finishing on City then before we just probably touch on Salah with the season he's having. Next season, what do you expect of them? I think obviously this summer they're going to spend probably close to 300 odd million on about four or five players. Do you reckon? Do you fancy them to push for the title again? Obviously, Pep looks like he's probably going to stay. I mean, we still haven't... I don't know when we have... Is it March we find out about their charges?
Charges should be out. Actually, I think that would be a great future topic for us to discuss at immense length and detail, all that complex trial. But yeah, I think next season for City, I would expect De Bruyne to leave, I would expect Gundogan to probably leave, I would expect... Edison's been begging to go to Saudi for years now, so I think that will probably happen. I think... There was reports of multiple other players, like Jack Grealish, for example, has been told he can leave. Yeah. So all these players which have been there for the last few years might leave, and they might buy these four, five, six players and bring them in. I just don't see them being able to recreate what they've been able to do the last few years. So I think you would always expect them to finish top four, just the nature of how Pep operates as a manager and the coach and the standards he sets. his teams will always be good, but I don't think they'll be the world beaters that they have, which is just crazy, isn't it? Football is just a crazy game, because if you'd have said to someone at the start of the season, and everyone was doing their predictions, what's going to happen with City? And it's just like, well, they're obviously not going to win the league, and you know, yeah. What else are they essentially going to win? And now we're here 6-7 months on, and it's just, oh, how rubbish is City? It's over for
absolutely ridiculous, isn't
Guten Nacht. Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean,
crazy
you can never rule Pep out, can you? But let's go on to Salah then.
Just awesome.
God damn. 11 games this season where he's had at least a goal and assist. First player ever to get a goal or an assist, and an assist even, against the champions in both fixtures.
Yeah, brilliant.
Is he top five for big players of all time? Is this reactionary maybe? I don't know. He's probably up there, right?
You know, I think the top five, top ten lists are so difficult, aren't they? Because there's just so many top players.
And it's subjective as well, depending on
who you are. Of course. But he's definitely not... He's definitely helping himself in this respect. He's pushing. He's pushing. You know, am I going to sit here and tell you that I think he's a top five Premier League player? No, not even with a gun to my head. But he's
fucking
definitely...
United fans, man. Always bitter, honestly.
Yeah, always dissing, man. And I just, naturally, he's Ballon d'Or this year, irregardless of what happens. The numbers he's posting are insane. We've said it every episode, we'll say it. We'll probably keep saying it to the end of the season.
It's just going to get boring.
He's getting there. I think he's putting himself, with his stats and everything, in a category of his own. He's matching really renowned players in the league. That's the type of thing one of the best five players in the Premier League would be doing if it is to be their final season. So that's all I'll say on that.
I saw Carragher said on after the game on Sunday, he was like, for him right now, provided that at the end of the season, he says only Henry is going to be ahead of Salah for him and kind of his all-time. Which, I mean, I think is obviously a bit great. Obviously, he's going to say as a Scouser. But you do look at the numbers and it's not ridiculous. I think in terms of numbers, he's probably going to be up there. Maybe as an overall player, you could question. You could a few others in there. You know, you've got your Rooney's in there. Bloody Ronaldo's obviously Bale if you're being crazy. But, What a player, what a season. With that all said then, looking down the table, going that top four fight, or top five potentially even, it looks like England probably are going to get that fifth Champions League spot, is looking awfully tasty. That's kind of where it's all at now, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, that's where the season is definitely hinging. Although you say five, but it's more like they're all loosely slapping each other, because I'm pretty sure that Chelsea lost, you had Bournemouth losing, you had Nottingham Forest losing, and Nottingham Forest could have, you know, position themselves really well, but fantastic game. I think that is the thing that's left now.
Yeah,
where is that going to finish?
Unless there's a colossal crash on Liverpool's side, but you've got Forest, City, Newcastle, Bournemouth, Chelsea, Villa, Brighton, maybe even Fulham if you're feeling a little bit crazy. There's 5 points between that, so that's third to tenth. Third to tenth, there is 8 points, but fourth to tenth, there's 5 points. Who do you think is going to get that? Let's say third and fourth, maybe even fifth, out of those clubs. Who do you are Forest going to hold on? Do you think?
Yeah, I'll caveat that with saying that I'm adamant, or I'm fairly sure that the fifth spot will be enough to guarantee Champions League for next season. So if we're going to go third to fifth, I think, despite absolutely annihilating them mere minutes ago, I do think that City will overtake Nottingham Forest at some point, because they've got more experience than Nottingham. They might not have as much experience as they did have, but they definitely do have more experience than Nottingham Forest. I think they will get tired towards the end. That being said, though, how amazing would it be if they got fourth?
The dream I have right now would be Forest and Bournemouth making it, and shove Brighton in there as well. But I don't think that's going to happen.
What do you think, then?
I think City are comfortable. I think they'll finish there. I regrettably say Newcastle are going to make it as well.
I agree.
I think probably City third, Newcastle fourth, and I'm going to say probably more of my heart than my head, but I reckon Forest will do enough to get fifth and get that Champions League spot.
Very minded to agree with you on that. I just desperately want Chelsea to not get European, not to get Champions League football, because I know how desperately they want it. So if they don't get it, that will just be super hilarious. Although I'm sure they'll win the Conference League. Woohoo, good for them. And they'll get Europa League football next season. So, but it's just I don't want them to finish in the Champions League. Because
absolutely, because they're so desperate. They're financially depending on it a bit, aren't they, as well? They're really holding out for that sponsor so they can have the Champions League money. But I don't think they're going to do it. I think, looking at Chelsea, should we touch on that Chelsea-Villa game very briefly then?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cole Palmer, he's got a little bit elusive recently. He's kind of seems to have not. He's not looking quite himself, is he? What's going on there?
I think Cole Palmer has sadly become the product of the environment that he's been festering in, and that he has continually. He hasn't even dropped off, because if you look at the stats, I think he's made 42 chances in open play in the last 2 months or so during this particular draft for Chelsea. So he hasn't stopped. Everyone's just stopped finishing them, essentially. And I now think he's kind of fell into the malaise and just maybe he's very frustrated with how things are going, and that's tipping him off his game slightly. I think he's lost Nico Jackson, which is his buddy, the guy that he relies on in the team to finish his chances, albeit it's Nico Jackson, so he's not doing it all the time, but he's definitely doing it more than the rest of the squad. I think he is just becoming a product of the system as well. A really interesting point on Chelsea is that at the start of the season, they were playing fast, direct, free-flowing attack, went for it, many chances created in a game, really going for goals. And it was put to the world that this is not what Maresca wants from his football team. Maresca wants controlled build-up play, slow, calculated movements. He doesn't want gung-ho football, and that's what Chelsea were playing. That was very much the offshoots of what Pochettino had been going for and had got at the end of last season before he was removed. So I think as the season's gone on, Maresca has had more influence on the play, and since he's had more influence on the play, Chelsea have gotten a lot worse, which is, if I was a Chelsea fan, I'd be concerned by that. And I think hearing that last season when he was at Leicester, they also saw a similar thing transpiring, that they started off very well and then tailed off in the second half of the season, maybe as Maresca was implementing his ideas, perhaps, on the Leicester players more. So I think Cole Palmer has just become a product of a controlled, boring environment.
He still has his moments, doesn't he? When he gets the ball, he still has his moments, and
he's still fantastic. You know, I still think he's one of the better players in the league. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, before this kind of drop off, you're looking at him probably being the second best player of the season behind Salah.
100%.
In terms of numbers and as just overall play. I think interesting what you said there about Leicester, because I remember when he came in, seeing some Leicester fans talking about Maresca and kind of what he was like as a manager. And the key thing that I remember them saying is his inability to adapt when getting found out. And that seems to be a little bit of what's happening here. Maybe, like you said as well, the influence over the players. But like, it's very interesting that that's happened.
But he is also
at the same time as it did.
He is tinkering now. I think that's something that they're a bit appreciative of, because he did play Reece James in midfield.
True.
Against Villa, so he's obviously not wedded to it, but I don't know whether this is just me in my opinion, but playing Reece James in central midfield,
that's what we're here for, Taylor, our opinions.
Yeah, it's so true. Just opinions, man. It's more of a desperation pull rather than like an esteemed tactical like masterclass. That screams more desperation to me rather than he's really thought that through. For all the years I always heard people scream about how you should play Victor Lindelof at CDM rather than centre back, and it just doesn't work like that. Football doesn't work like that.
Trent at right back is a whole other thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
In midfield, even.
Yeah, in midfield, and it's always the idea seems better than the plan. So it'll be interesting to see how Chelsea finish. I really hope they just tail off enormously, because that would be hilarious. But Cole Palmer will be fine.
I think so. He will, I mean, hello. Finishing off with Chelsea here, and then we'll probably touch on Villa really quickly, but if they don't get Champions League, would he be tempted to look elsewhere? Is that something that would happen? I mean, did he sign a stupid 9-year contract or something?
He did sign a new contract, but I don't think he'll go anywhere. I don't know if he's thinking that way. I just don't.
I don't think he's thinking at all, actually. Yeah.
No, that's kind of what I'm inclining to, and I don't think that's probably where his head. I think he's somewhere where he's playing football, he's in London, and he's probably got a bunch he's probably developed good relationships in the locker room. Everyone's a similar age. So I think he'll be fine. But I think it's something Chelsea will definitely worry about if it was to carry on. Because he is one of the better players in the world. He's not playing Champions League and he's yet to play for Chelsea in the Champions League. So at what point will he just want to play? I mean, should come to Manu, but...
So, let's not start that. Speaking of Man United players, though, or ex-Man United players in this sense, as you are the Man United representative in this two-man podcast, Marcus Rashford at Villa, 2 assists yesterday. He's looking good. He's looking a little bit more dynamic. Emery seems to be kind of, you know, hyping him up, cuddling him a little bit. What are your thoughts there on Rashford at Villa?
I think brilliant. I think great for him. If he continues and performs, although I feel like he does play to deceive slightly, I think he's one of these players where he'll do, lots of players can get an assist in the game, but he's not going to be the main topic. I feel, obviously he's come on and had, I'll recalibrate my opinion. He's come on and he's got 2 assists, then they have won the game, so that's a great contribution. If he keeps it up for the rest of the season and someone buys him, perfect. That's Manchester. That's money in the bank for Manchester United. That's Marcus Rashford getting to carry on his career somewhere else where all the problems can disappear from the past and he can be a player reborn and everyone will be very happy for him. I think that is a well-established fact now in that the ties need to be cut and the better he does at Villa, the better it is for everybody involved. So, yes, that's probably my opinion on it, I think.
All right, that's fair enough. Shall we move on to the aforementioned club, Manchester United?
Let's do it.
And obviously 2-2 with Everton, 2-0 down, Bruno free kick, 2-1, and finished 2-2 in the end. But that first 70 minutes, oh my God, how bad are Man United, which is everyone's favourite topic, including mine. So Taylor, please take it away.
Yeah, well, the answer to your question is very short. We're very bad. Since Ruben Amorim has taken over, we are probably the worst team in the league. Actually, no, almost definitely, if you were to factor in all the financials behind us, we are the worst team in the league.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I think that first 70 minutes was as close to a crime against humanity in a footballing sense as I've ever seen. Just when you think it can't get worse, it gets worse. The players look more confused by the system. The players look less confident than they have before. It's almost insulting how they play because they obviously score the free kick and then all, you know, burst into life. Give everyone a break involved and just... It's so typical. Everton score first. Obviously, you could have put £1 million on Everton scoring first, and you'd have got £999,999 back. You know, it's just that it was so obviously going to happen. It always happens. I think
Everton were favourites before the game as well. Which, I mean, I went for the last time United weren't favourites against Everton. You know, that's wild.
They just were better than us, and for 70 minutes of it, and arguably, to be honest, if you just took the game, they were just better than us in the whole game, I thought.
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously, the free kick was really good, but Bruno also was just painful to watch at times during that first half, especially. I feel like when he's really off it, he really stinks up the place, which is a shame because he is our best player and he's just done so much. But when he is bad, he's really bad. And when he's next to Uncle Casemiro in the centre and he's playing bad, it's just... It's so stinky, and Hoyland couldn't buy a chance at the minute. You know, the man is just drowning now.
How much of that can you put on him, and how much can you put that on the system and the players around him? Because there's always that with strikers. You do have to make your own luck a little bit, but he's in maybe the worst team in the league in terms of form and just identity at the moment. So there is that.
Yeah, I think Hoyland has just, again, just become a product of the environment. There was a time in the season when he was trying to make his own luck, but that was about 5 months ago. The team, for as long as he's been in the team, have never, ever crossed the ball into him, played him through. All the things that he is best at, the team actively pursue against trying. And as if I was Hoyland, I would be beyond frustrated permanently. And obviously, it is part him. You know, he's not shifting all the blame, but a big part of it is just that system permanently working against everything that he's best at, and he is the striker. If I was to put any of the players through on goal to score a goal, I would pick Rasmus Højlund because he is the striker of the team. So ergo, he should be the best at putting the ball in the back of the net. And we're chronically bad at letting him do so, or at least letting him attempt to do so. And now it's very much a case of if he does get one chance, it's the all or nothing. It all hangs on it. Because if he scores it, that when he does score a goal, and he will, but when he does score a goal, I'm sure you'll watch just this pain of emotion leave his body like a ghost or whatnot. Just because he's holding on to so much. He's Manchester United's main striker at the age of 21 with very little senior pro experience. And there's a lot of weight on his shoulders. He just needs that goal. But no one's helping him get that goal. So I think once he does get it, he'll be a different man. But there's some chronic problems throughout this team. Chronic problems.
Well, it comes from the top down, right? I've just seen it just before we recorded this as well. Man United are going to get rid of another 200 people, apparently. Another 200 redundancies. I've seen stuff today about the lunches are being reduced to sandwiches and soup. I don't know how true that is.
Yeah, staff canteen has been closed. Obviously, we've now got up to 200 more redundancies at the club. The club obviously posted their financial results for the quarter last week, and they have roughly, 300 million unpaid transfer fees still. And if you were to look at what players are accruing these transfer fees, it will make you cry. And there is, again, you say from the top down, but then I'll just quickly touch on that point. Everyone's obviously looking at Sir Jim Ratcliffe and the bogeyman, you know, carving through Manchester United, removing all of its soul. But the only thing I will say on it is that the only reason why this has to happen, it has to happen because Manchester United are a poorly ran business, financially speaking. And they don't have the success on the pitch to match their ambitions financially, which they have been pursuing. But there has been a certain group of people who have owned the club for 18 years and have majority took out over £1 billion of Manchester United and put £660 million onto a revolving credit facility. So the people, it doesn't matter who came into the club. Yeah, that's it. That's a hell of a credit card. Yeah. And it doesn't matter who came in. They were all going to have to do this because it was going to have to happen eventually, which is exactly why the Glazer family seeked a joint ownership product with someone else in the world, be it the Qataris or Sir Jim, because they knew this was going to have to happen and they didn't think they'd be able to survive having to do that themselves. They couldn't make those decisions themselves, so they brought someone else in and now they're the face of it, because you don't hear about them anymore. You just hear about Sir Jim Ratcliffe doing this because he has to. But yeah, top down, dreadfully run. Recruitment's been dreadful. We're 16th in the Premier League with minus 7 goal difference, and it's middle of February. It is historically bad. We've got a new manager who has not hit the ground running, nor has actually looked like he's took a step through the front door yet in terms of progress. I think the squad look really old in some places and then extremely young in others, and don't have that sweet spot in between of just players who are the correct age and are the best in their positions. I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. And, everything around Manchester United is permanently dramatised. And when something like this is going on, the noise must just feel constant. And if you're a player or a manager in that zone, I imagine that's a very difficult zone to remove yourself from to focus with a clear mind. So I can imagine it will get a lot worse before it gets a lot better. I think the summer break post-season, no tournaments for us at all, no internationals, no Club World Cup. Just get everyone away, go on a 6-week holiday, forget about everything. don't even look at a football and come back and with a deep breath. Although I will just caveat that with, I was listening the other day, Bruno Fernandes, if he turned around in the summer and said he wanted to leave, I'd get it. And if he wanted to, I'd be all right about it, because he's in the prime years of his career and he's spent so many of the prime years of his career at United. And we've just given him nothing.
Yeah. All right, tying that off then. So, first of all, Taylor defends billionaires. Just let that be known. Put that onto the internet. He loves billionaires. They should get more money. and then, Ruben Amorim, this is maybe a more basic question. Do you keep him if it's this bad until the end of the season? Does he stay on?
Yeah, I don't think anyone has. Man U fans don't like dismissing a manager. Everyone wants to back the manager. It's just how we are. So, I think getting rid of the manager against the backdrop of knowing how much it's going to cost to get rid of him, against the backdrop of knowing it's the chief executive's first big decision, against the backdrop of knowing that there's more redundancies.
Yeah.
No.
You can't. Yeah, I agree. I think that's completely fair enough. All right, then. I mean, again, we'll briefly touch on just the relegation. I think that's more or less finished in the sense. Those bottom three, the three that came up, are definitely going down. Ipswich, Leicester and Southampton. It's now a 5-point gap between Ipswich and Wolves. So Wolves are 17th, Ipswich are 18th. The three of them absolutely reek. Wolves have been bad, but they've got some quality, like Cunha, which is going to keep them up, I think. But yeah, I mean, those three teams, it just shows a gap again between the Championship and the Premier League and how much worse it's getting, basically. But I just thought we'd address that and basically say it's pretty much done.
Yeah, all I'm hearing from that, yeah. I was going to say, all I'm hearing from that is Liam Delap for 40 million, which, go on, yeah, Manchester United.
He's getting a move somewhere, isn't he? He's getting a move somewhere.
He's getting somewhere.
I saw Lineker, yeah, actually, to say about Arsenal having him, which isn't, I mean, I see the vision. I said this the other day, I think, about not wanting him. I think just based on the fact that now we are maybe into our prime, maybe a more experienced, you know, striker. Not to say Liam Delap's not locked in, but I need someone who's more locked in Premier League wise already and has those games where I think he's still a little bit raw and a little bit young.
Be interesting though. Cynical there. It'd be interesting though.
But exactly. On that note, Taylor, anything else you want to touch on?
Nothing really. We've got some midweek games which I'd completely forgotten about. Coming up. So.
I mean, most importantly, next Sunday, 4:30, it's the red and white chalk board derby.
It's the red and white chalk board derby, man.
Sunday.
Because I'll be back as well from Sociedad on the Saturday evening.
Okay, perfect. We'll watch it then. We'll watch it together. We'll get an immediate response on the podcast. It'll be right after. Don't you worry, folks. We'll be all over that. But yeah, midweek's games as well, so we'll have two game weeks to kind of fly through. Arsenal got Forest on Wednesday night, I believe, which would actually be quite an interesting game.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll cover everything again next week. Sorry, this is going to be on Monday night or Tuesday morning. We want to do them mostly Monday mornings, but we had, you know, just big social lives and we're really cool and people want to spend time with us, unfortunately.
That is true. That is true.
It's hard work. Nothing else from me, Taylor?
Nothing else from me. Yeah, just thank you guys for listening. Please share, please like, please, you know, comment below anything you'd like us to talk about. We've got so much time to talk about it, so please just let us know. And yeah, more episodes to come. So thank you very much for watching the first watchable episode of the Red and White Chalkboard podcast.
Hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Fingers crossed. This is where, yeah, my foreshadowing is going to come back and haunt me.
Yeah, but, I know. Yes. My Cormac's editing, amateur editing skills are really getting pushed to the limit here. So you're going to have to bear with me, unfortunately, but I hope so.
But yeah, but thank you very much for listening, guys, and I'll give you the blessing of listening to the best intro and outro music in the world ever. Thank you very much, guys. Goodbye.